Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today, and I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone, no matter what stage of life you're in. If you haven't already, would you take a second to subscribe to this podcast? That means every Monday when a new podcast comes out, it'll just show up in your queue ready to listen to. It also helps Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and everywhere else know that you like the show and it'll recommend it to others. And if you really want to help us out, you could leave a rating or review. Reviews are life to podcasts, and yours would mean the world to me. Today, my guest is Teresa Swanstrom Anderson, and she's a pink-haired theologian with 3 new Bible studies out. I'm so excited for you to meet her because she is just the sweetest and the most real. As Teresa and I sat down, we realized we have so much in common, from adopted kiddos to even the name of one of our sons. I just love this conversation and hearing all about Teresa's new books and why she focused so much on giving us women Bible studies, not only to help us grow, but to help us really dig into the Bible on our own and to feel capable to do so with her own tips and tricks throughout her studies. Teresa and I also talked about first fruits and what it means to name a sacrifice and how that alone helps us follow through. So friends, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I'm so excited because I get to sit down with a new friend who I'm like giddy about talking to. Like, this conversation is going to be so sweet and so fun because we have so much in common. It's going to be great. So Teresa Swanstrom Anderson, welcome to It's Time for Coffee.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is going to be so much fun. And before we like jump into like the like meat of this conversation, tell me first what's in your cup.
It is a latte. I'm not allowed to go to Starbucks anymore once I realized how much I was spending a month. So we bought him an espresso machine and I paid for it within a very short amount of time.
It's embarrassing how quickly we justified our Breville. It's similar to the Nespresso, how quickly we justified it. And then we made the rule, like, if we can make it at home, we're not allowed to get it out.
Yes.
And so it was paid for very fast.
Depressingly fast.
Today, we're going to talk all about your Bible studies, which I am looking at the covers right now, and I love the covers. They're so inclusive, so well done. Just excited. And I'm excited about the content within the pages, right? Like leaning into biblical literacy. And I know that's your passion in your heart, but first I want to hear about you, who you are and what you do.
Yeah. So I'm a mom of 6, a very unlikely mom of 6, because I always thought that I would have a career in the art world and I never wanted children at all. They were not in any part of my plan for my future, but God obviously, laughed at that.
Yeah.
So things changed. So
that's so cool. So how did that change? Like, tell me, like, give me a little bit of insight to that. What changed?
Sure. So my plan for my life was to get my doctorate in art history, move to Europe, preferably Italy, and work at a museum, you know, for the rest of my life and be a curator. And I'm sure that was a very easy job to get. And I had recently graduated and I lived in Seattle at the time. That's where I'm from for the most part. And I don't know if you're a Grey's Anatomy fan at all, but there's a shot that they show all the time on that television show where it's the Space Needle and it's this green bench in front of it. And supposedly Meredith's house is like right next to it. Anyway, that bench was my bench long before the show ever existed. And that is where I would pray and journal and just spend my time with God every day. And from that bench, you can see this bustling city down below. And then you can also look over to the side and see the ferry drifting from downtown Seattle to the San Juan Islands. And as I was praying one afternoon, I just really felt like God was saying, hey, do you know that you've never actually consulted me on any of your plans? And I thought, God, why wouldn't you want me to be in the art world? Because there really aren't a whole lot of Christians within the area that I was wanting to go into. And I thought, I'll just be a light for him. But kind of including him on the plan would probably be a good idea. So that day, I just felt like he was saying, which life do you want? As I was gazing out, do you want that bustling lifestyle of, you know, the coming and going and just spinning your wheels like I was seeing the city below? Or do you want the maybe slower but more intentional life of going from point A to point B, like I was seeing the ferry over to my side? And I thought, you know, if I'm going to live one life, I should probably live the one that he has created me for. And so that day I just held my hands open and I was like, okay, God, send me. I don't know where you're sending me to. I don't know what this means. But I want what you want. And I pray that you would close any doors that aren't supposed to be open. So pretty quickly things completely changed. And it wasn't like I wanted kids the next day. It wasn't like I knew what my quote unquote purpose was right away, but I knew pretty quickly what it was not. And I knew that it was not art history. So I stopped, you know, applying to schools, and I stopped kind of thinking about that as my future. And I started interviewing all over Seattle. I initially wanted to move to DC, but my mentor said that she was praying about it, and she really felt like God wanted me to stay in Seattle. And I was like, okay, if that's true, then I need your help to help me stay. She at the time was Bill Gates Sr., his right-hand man, girl, at the Gates Foundation. So she knew a lot of amazing people. So I started interviewing a lot of incredible nonprofits and started getting a bit excited about the idea of staying. But I just really wanted to live a life of significance and a life outside of myself. I just didn't know what that looked like or what that was. So every single time it was down to me and one other person for probably, gosh, 6 or 7 different organizations, all nonprofits. And these are my words, not God's, but I essentially felt like God was saying, you don't suck. That's just not where I want you. Like, I brought you to, you know, number two. So you're good enough. You're worthy enough, or, you know, whatever, you're qualified enough. I wasn't, but, you know, it made me feel like I could do it. It's just not where I was supposed to be. So eventually, I was managing a restaurant on the Seattle waterfront at the time. And, some yucky stuff happened, and I was like, I either have to quit or get a restraining order against this one guy. And I decided to go for the quitting option. So I again told my mentor, whose name was Heather, I said, you know, I've got to find something or I'm going to have to move home with mom and dad, which is fine. I just don't really want to. And she said, well, my boyfriend's company is hiring. It's a, you know, just an administrative assistant job. So I know it's not what you want to ultimately do, but it'll pay your bills while you figure it out. And so I did get that job. And so her boyfriend that kind of helps me get the job, who actually my dad was his mentor, they eventually broke up and I married him. So that is my husband.
That's amazing.
So I had nothing to do with their breakup, but, you know, she was right that God needed me to stay because a particular reason. And I guess that reason was twofold. One, for me to realize that there is great purpose in waiting. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of personal growth during that time of just hunkering down and waiting and feeling like the world was passing me by, as all my friends, you know, were getting internships in New York or going and working for the Peace Corps or just doing things, incredible things abroad and just making a difference in the world. And I was just hunkered down in that restaurant until I was in an office job that I didn't even enjoy. But and then obviously becoming best friends with my husband and eventually realizing we were in love. And 4 months later, we were engaged. 4 months after that, we were married.
I love that. That's so fun. Okay, so we have something else in common, which I just love. When I turned 25, which at the 25, I had two babies and it was just very different. But at 25, my husband sent me and my dear friend on a trip to Seattle to celebrate my birthday. He's like, go shop, go have fun. For about 4 years prior to that, every winter, because we lived in Alaska, every winter we would fight so bad about getting out of Alaska. He was done with winter. He was just done. And I would say, this is where our roots are. This is where our home is. This is where our family is. We are not leaving. That was fear, obviously, saying like, we are planted here. We cannot go anywhere else. This is what we know. In Seattle, near the Space Needle, God said, I have more for you than this. Are you ready? And I was like, oh no. But it was just like,
as soon as you what said, does that mean, like, God?
Yeah, I'm like, oh gosh. But it's so funny because like, it was in Seattle, near the Space Needle, just walking in a bustling city where I like very clearly heard him whisper, like, are you gonna listen to me? Are you gonna right. want what I want? And one of the things I thought of when you were saying that was like, we don't even have to grieve the future that we're missing out on, because all of a sudden when we align with God's plan for our life, there's alignment, there's peace, there's yeah. questions for sure, but there's like, okay, we're gonna put this aside and we're gonna follow you.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's funny because, and this might be a question for later, so I might be messing you up, but I, for years, you know, that was 15 plus years ago that all that happened. And all these years I've been like, God, why did you give me that such deep passion for art history? I mean, what a random thing to just love. But when I was praying about it last fall, saying, why did you waste that? Like, why did you waste my time, your time? Why didn't I start out as, I don't know, start out in seminary instead, or start out in, I don't know, majoring in English since I'm a writer or whatever. Why art history? And I really feel like he whispered, that's how you study the Bible. Mm. And I kind of take, you know, a different approach from a lot of my teachers, in that I really dig into the same things that I did when I was studying art. I want to know the history, what's going on culturally. I want to know what was going on in that time to inspire an artist to create a sculpture or a painting or whatever it is. And that's the same thing that I do with the Bible, is I, you know, it wasn't written to us. We're not ancient Israelites. We don't yeah. understand everything. So we need to dig into that. So my dream job would to be an archaeologist. So I just love that kind of thing. And so that's really a big portion of my, you know, Bible studies that are coming out, is all these history lessons, and not in a way that you feel like you're in school and, you know, your eyes are going to glaze over, but really in a relatable way that I kind of weave it in and out.
Yeah. So you have three books coming out. One is called Leading Wherever You Are, and that's a study about Joshua.
Yeah. It's so hard to find a women's book on leadership that is Christian, especially, I mean, they're out there, but they're very few. And then it's like almost non-existent to find a Bible study on specifically yeah. women's leadership. So it was really fun to write. And there's a lot of leadership principles throughout. My husband, my husband and I guess, are kind of obsessed with books. So we have shelves full of leadership books as it is. So I really poured through those as well as through the Bible. So it's a lot of really practical takeaways for anyone, whether you're leading your kids, you know, if you're a mom, you're still a leader.
Yep.
Or if you are in the boardroom, there's anything in between. If you're leading a team, if you're leading even, you know, literally leading a Bible study. So there's just tons of takeaways from biblical concepts, as well as, you know, to just normal day leadership stuff.
And does that does it focus mostly in the book of Joshua?
Yes. So chapter by chapter.
That's
yeah. So we go verse by verse, chapter by chapter, all the way through the entire thing. And it's really fun because, and again, I'm a total Bible dork, so I get kicks out of this, but, you know, it's the first time that we see women stand up for themselves is in Joshua. It's a group of sisters who their dad passed away and there were no brothers. So when the tribes were distributed, they were not going to get anything and they had to stand up for themselves. So it's all sorts of, you know, real life things that, and a lot of stories that we kind of glaze over and maybe haven't studied in depthly.
And then they're saying yes in the darkness, and that is a study through Psalms.
It is. So I felt like there's so many incredible studies and books through Psalms, and I didn't have a whole lot to contribute that hasn't already been said. And then I realized, you know what? There's very few that really dig into what David was going through when he wrote them. Mm-hmm. And so I took all the Psalms that correspond to stories in 1st and 2nd Samuel. And so we dig into 1st and 2nd Samuel, those particular chapters within them, that, and, you know, why was he feeling exhausted, or why was he overwhelmed? Why was he angry? Whatever it is. And it was, I actually didn't initially write it for, to be published. I wrote it for my own Bible study group here in Denver. Our church is called LifeGate. And our pastor wanted me to write something as we were going through a really hard season with one of our kids. At that same, you know, within that same 6 months, my father-in-law was in the hospital. We had a family death.
You walked in Daniel's footsteps, David's footsteps in a little way, like, because you're like, it's just, it's heavy sorrow after sorrow. And there's times where we're like, come on, like, what's going on? And some of those things, like,
right.
David heaped on himself and he knew that. But there's also that, like, man, and I have friends who say, like, I really think that David struggled with mental illness. Like, I think that he might have had some, like, high highs and low lows, like some depression. And I like seeing that, and who knows if it's true, but I like seeing that because it makes him the title Man After God's Own Heart. It just gives it so much more weight to know that, man, he really, really wrestled.
Yeah. Yeah, and learning to continue stepping out and saying yes, even when you feel that darkness kind of unfolding around you. So that study is really about going through hard stuff, but not sitting in it, but keep stepping through it, and, you know, coming out on the other side.
That's awesome. And then the last one you have coming out in July is called Living What Really Matters. And this is a study through Philippians.
Yes. I was really excited to write this one because I feel like everyone has written on joy in Philippians. Mm-hmm. And until I really read through it again, you know, many of us have read through it a number of times, or at least bits and pieces. But the joy is what's singled out every time. But there is so much more in that than just living a life of joy. So I really wanted to pull out those aspects that aren't necessarily touched on. A life of unity, a life of community, things like that. And just learning to be okay with struggle. And I wish I had it memorized right now, but I'm blanking on it. My favorite quote talks about how beautiful people don't just happen. Beautiful people are the kind of that go through hard stuff. I mean, if you have something really horrible happen, if you find out you have cancer or that your husband cheated on you or that you lost your job or whatever it is, are you going to go to the person that is happy-go-lucky and nothing wrong seems to ever happen in their life? Or do you go to the person who has been to hell and back and still somehow has that joy in their life? You know, personally, I'm going to go to that latter because they really understand and I want what they have. So that is basically Paul. I mean, he's been through so much, and even when he writes Philippians, he's writing to his friends in Philippi from jail. Yeah. He's and still he's encouraging them the whole time, and he's not dwelling on where he is. So that was really inspiring to me to just really understand the concept of what does matter.
For sure. I love that. And I love that you have such a passion for biblical literacy. And that's something that I kind of mentioned early on. What do you define biblical literacy as?
I think it's really important that we're not all spoon-fed. I, especially as women, you know, in in ancient, you know, in history, we are have not been allowed to even study the Bible. In Babel times, we wouldn't have had the education that men had. And that's really one thing that, you know, the story with Mary and Martha. Why was her sister so upset that she was sitting at the feet of Jesus? Was it just because she was fixing the meals and getting things ready? No, that was not the only reason. If you dig in further, and this is why I love the history aspect, it's because her sister, you know, she was sitting at the feet of Jesus, which is what you do if you were a pupil, if you're a student. And she was freaking out that, oh my gosh, my sister shouldn't be in that space. She's supposed to be doing the household chores with me, not... She was basically trying to save her sister from, you know, social suicide, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jesus said, no, she has chosen what is better. And we see that all through Jesus's messages and through the early church. And I just think it's really important that we continue that and that we don't just read books about the Bible, but actually the Bible. So as much as I want women to read my studies and go through the studies, I want to teach them how to do it by themselves. I want to kind of work myself out of a job. I don't want for someone to need me or someone to need any of us, you know, as much as I love Beth Moore and Priscilla Shire and Jenny Allen and all those, Jen Wilkin, I want people to not need us because they understand how to go through scripture and really understand it. But a lot of us, you know, myself included, until, you know, not too long ago, will open up the Bible and be like, okay, what do I do with this? I don't know where to start. I don't know, like, how do you really understand this?
Well, and so I think, too, we've needed these thought leaders, these women who have gone before us, who have dug into the Word to say, hey, this is actually what it's trying to say, and pulling it apart and saying, like, this is actually what's happening. This is what we can take away from it. And where women now are being like, oh, the Bible actually is for us now.
Yes.
It's not just this ancient textbook full of rules. It's actually like alive and active and can sharpen us and prepare us for what's to come. It's not just something that we, you know, kind of got beat up with in our childhood.
Right. Exactly.
I love that.
And really understanding how to, and don't let this, you know, if you're listening, don't let your ears glaze over to this part, but I think it's so important to dig into the ancient language, the Greek and the Hebrew, because people that are translating it may not translate it in a way that best helps us to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. So if you read a scripture that doesn't make sense, you can, you know, and I lead people through this within my studies is, I ask you to download a particular app. Actually, there's two. And one of them has loads of translations within it. And the other one has the ability to break down, you know, the Greek and the Hebrew in a really easy way. So again, teaching people to not need a study, but they can just open the Bible themselves and figure it out. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Denison Ministries. Denison Ministries is a movement creating 7 million culture-changing Christians who are committed to carrying out the truth of the gospel to their sphere of influence through a variety of ways, which is why Denison Ministries is excited about sponsoring what God is up to on the It's Time for Coffee podcast. One of the cool ways Denison Ministry has helped Christians feel closer to God is through their First 15 devotional. First 15 is designed to help you spend the first 15 minutes of your day experiencing God through meaningful devotion, scripture, worship, and prayer. You can sign up and get the First 15 email devotional sent directly to your inbox at first15.org/subscribe or start your day off with the First 15 devotional podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. Guys, it is with zero chill that I have to remind you that my book, It's Time for Jesus, is out now. Can you even believe it? You may be thinking, wait, what book are you even talking about, Jeanette? Well, let me remind you. For the past 2 years, I've been pouring my heart and soul into a 30-day devotional called It's Time for Jesus, believing the truth of who you are right where you are. This devotional is packed with stories and lessons that God has taught me, and the Bible stories that have shaped the way I think, and the words that I wrote. This book has been prayed over and is just for you. I am over the moon and so dang proud of it. I would love if you picked up your copy, available on Amazon now. And get ready, because I think we're going to do some sort of book club, Bible study, group devo. I don't know what we're going to do, but I can't wait for it. Y'all, it's time for Jesus. Okay, now back to the show, because it really is time for coffee. One of my favorite things last year and most of this year, I'm just really behind this year, is I listened to the Bible in a year with the YouVersion Bible app, and then listened to it with the Bible Recap with Tara Lee Cobble. And so that gave me so much context on what was actually going on in the world during that time, because for the most part, I'm like, oh, I'm sure it's like ancient Rome. And it's like, no, it's not, that's not the timeline we're on yet. But it's just, it was so fascinating to me to be like, this is why this part matters, or this is the significance in those women standing up for themselves. And this is why it's significant. And this is how we can shape it to our lives today. And that was like such a beautiful game changer in my year last year. I was like, oh my gosh, it was just a beautiful thing, like ending the Old Testament and being like, whew, we need Jesus. Like the anticipation of Jesus to enter the scene. I was like, this is powerful. This is so cool. And so, I totally agree and believe in like taking some of our Bible study leaders out of it so that we can actually dive headfirst into the actual word.
Yeah. Yeah. That podcast you were talking about is so good. And the Bible Binge too. I love.
Oh my gosh. Have you ever listened to that? Knox and Jamie are my favorite.
Yes.
Yeah. I love it. I've had Knox and Aaron both on the podcast, and I just adore them. Like, they're so
hilarious. Yeah. I just kind of want to be their friends.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Don't you feel like you are their friends though? Like,
yeah,
they're just so good. I'm like a Patreon. Totally. Like, I sing their praises as much as I can. So you are super passionate about women saying yes to God. What does that look like? One, in your own life, how are you teaching your kids that? And how are you teaching the world that?
Yeah, gosh, good question. So I think first of all is really just taking the time with Christ. And I know that's super general and kind of the churchy Jesus answer, but this would have been 9 years ago. We were living still in San Antonio, and we're in Denver now. We had recently had two biological boys, 3 and 4, and had brought home a baby girl who was super malnourished. She weighed 9 pounds at 5 months, so a lot of medical needs there. And then 4 months after bringing her home, we brought home Ezekiel, who was almost 7, or I guess he would have been 7 right then. So suddenly, really thrown into a lot.
Now, were those toddlers, like, those were adoptions?
Yes. So okay. 4 of our kids are from Ethiopia. So
oh, we had 2 biological. Okay.
Yeah. So 2 biological, we call them our blondies, and then a baby girl, and then an older boy. And then we brought home 2 years later, 2 more, a couple years later. But at that time, suddenly I had 4 kids. Mm-hmm. One didn't speak English. One had huge medical needs, and 2, we were trying to help feel like they weren't ignored, because the oldest and youngest now took a lot of time away from what they knew previously. And my husband's job was changing, and he was required to spend a whole lot of more time traveling, and just, I was drowning, completely and wholly drowning. I was still doing my Bible study at church. I was in leadership at our MOPS group. But I really just went to those things as almost just because there was childcare and coffee, not for any other reason, just because, yeah, I was just, I was in survival mode. So one morning I collapsed on the kitchen floor, just sobbing. And I was like, God, is this really what you called me to? Is this really what you're asking of me? I am so beyond exhausted. I can't, you know, I can't do anything right. I can't catch up. I can't, whatever. And I felt like he was whispering to me the words first fruits. And I know what first fruits are. I know the concept, you know, it's spoken a lot of in the Old Testament, especially that is your best and first crops or your perfect lamb or, you know, whatever it is. And I was confused. I'm like sobbing there with the, you know, my toddlers crawling on my lap, you know, giving me big smooshy kisses, little toddler kisses, and Ezekiel standing a couple feet away, looking at me with really wide eyes, being like, what is going on with this white lady? And I was like, God, I don't understand. I don't have any ears of corn. I don't have any wheat or a lamb or what does this have to do with me? And I felt like he was saying, yeah, but you do have your first fruits of time. Mm-hmm. And you know, what are you giving me? You're giving me the leftovers of everything. And, you know, everything that I was doing was hurried and sporadic. I would pray quickly. I would attempt-ish my Bible study. I think we were probably going through a Beth Moore study. So that's pretty intensive. And I wasn't taking truly the time for it. And, you know, it looked different because I was hardly functioning. So I was like, but what do I do with that? I can't wake up any earlier. I can't give you the first fruits of my day because I'm not sleeping through the night as it is. I was falling asleep at stop signs, not stop lights, stop signs. That's how exhausted I was.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really don't think that I can get up any earlier with all of Imani's sleep struggles at that time. And he said, yeah, but you can give me the first fruits of nap time. And I was like, well, God, that's when I get everything done. That's when I do the laundry and clean up the toys and sit for 5 seconds. You know, Instagram wasn't around yet, so it was Facebook. You know, it's my time to scroll through Facebook or, you know, and he was like, well, you need to give it to me. So I did, starting that very next day. It was like God gave me a divine supply of time. I was able to get everything done that I needed to, and I spent time with him. Mm-hmm. It was almost weird, almost creepy. And so for years I did that, and my family massively noticed the difference. And I would, you know, they noticed that I was more patient, that I was more kind, that I was more loving, and they could tell when I skipped every now and then. They'd be like, you didn't get up, you know, or, you know, you didn't spend your nap time, did you? It was like God loved me back to life.
I love that. That's so sweet.
And a couple years after that, when children were all sleeping through the night, I again felt like he was saying, okay, now you give me the actual first fruits. Now I want you getting up early, and I'm not an early bird. So again, it was a sacrifice for sure. I started getting up 2 hours before everybody, and just really spent a lot of time with him. And I think that the fact that every single morning I had to make a conscious decision who I was going to live for was the big thing. You know, every morning as my alarm goes off and I want to snuggle closer in my blankets, I felt like he was saying, okay, so which relationship are you after? The one with your pillow or the one with me? And, you know, most mornings I choose him. Every once in a while, I still can't get up. But, you know, it's been 9 years now. Probably 6 of them have been getting up massively early, and it's really changed everything for me.
That's sweet. And your kids are like, they've learned that by example. Like, you've set that example for them, you set that tone, and then you teach that tone. You've said that over and over, like, this is what works for me. And I have friends who are like, I really didn't want this to be true. I really didn't want to be that same kind of, you know, leader that says, man, waking up early really does set the tone for my day. But y'all, it really does set the tone. It really does. And I think that to name it the first fruits, like to name it a tithe of our time, to really kind of put a, to put, to name a sacrifice is kind of what it looks like to me, to say like, not just like, I'm going to get up early and do my quiet time. Well, I can justify my quiet time in my bed real easy. Like,
right. Totally.
God, I'm here. I'm super quiet.
I'm just going to pray here with my eyes closed, snuggled under my blanket.
I am here. But when we walk in sacrifice and say, yes, Lord, I will serve you. I will give you my first fruits. I will sacrifice for your good and for our relationship, man, that adds a depth that we're probably lacking in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And now with the, you know, quarantine, homeschooling weirdness, I feel like our mornings are slower.
Mm-hmm.
Life in general, yes, is slower because we don't have all the activities and all that. But I still work full time, so does my husband, and we're now teaching 5 of our 6 kids. So life does not feel slower. But the fact that we're not running off in the morning like we were has allowed us to every morning, you know, the kids have breakfast, they do their chores, and then we sit down and we do meditation, and then we spend some time. Right now we're doing Bob Goff's Love Does for Kids. Mm-hmm. And then I also have Mark Batterson's Circle Maker Kids Devotional. And they're amazing. And I think that I've had a lot of shame and guilt over the fact that I don't do daily Bible studies with my kids, and yet I'm a Bible study teacher. And I'm going through one of Beth Moore's old studies right now, but I can't remember if it was that or her newest book, Chasing Vines, that she talked about how that didn't work for her family. Yeah. And it kind of shed off some of that guilt of, I don't know, when you see it online, when you see it on social media with these sweet families all in a circle, you know, it, for my family anyway, it's kind of unattainable.
Well, I was having coffee with my friends, like every Friday morning we set up a Zoom call and we just like drink coffee together, and it's been like the best thing through quarantine. And I kind of made mention, I'm a Southern Baptist pastor's daughter, Baptist through and through, like I've had to shake off some of those chains. I said something like, oh, we started so many Bible studies or so many devotionals at the dinner table or so many in the mornings. I said it never worked for our family. It always ended in somebody yelling, like somebody losing their temper or one of us like freaking out. And my friend was like, oh my gosh, thank you for telling me that. Like, I just assumed that like everybody had it together, that my family was the only one that didn't. And I was like, oh my gosh, like we can't even like watch church right now without getting onto one kid for watching the TV upside down. I'm like, this is church. Like, I know we're in our pajamas, but we're still in church. Sit up. So it's totally, because it isn't for everybody, but finding what does work for everybody is a sweet thing. Like my kids, I've been putting on the Bible recap and the Bible in the morning as we get ready for breakfast. Like, it's still on. It's still teaching them something. It's still like, and my husband's like, I can't handle that they're like not listening to it. I'm like, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if they're hearing every single word. What matters is hopefully that they'll get through the Bible this year. That at some point they'll be like, oh yeah, I've heard this before. Like, oh, I remember this obscure story that nobody talks about because I just like listened to it while I was eating breakfast one morning. So I was like, it's just setting a habit. And
it is setting a habit.
And that's, I think as moms, as wives, as caretakers, like the best thing for us to do is set the tone and set the habits. And that's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I try to do as I like just sent my kid. I was like, everybody go to your room. They're all good. I can't handle it. So I'll have to apologize later.
It's so true though. I mean, just living it out day to day, you know, when an ambulance goes past, do you just comment, oh, I wonder what's going on? Or do you say, hey, let's pray real quick? Yep. It's truly just setting our hearts up for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, agreed. What is your hope for women during these studies? Like you've already poured your heart into them. You've already learned the lessons you're going to learn from them. What is your hope as you release them?
Well, you mentioned it briefly in the beginning. You know, I fought really hard for those covers. Oh, and, you know, those of you who are listening that haven't seen them, because three studies are coming out all at the same time with the purpose of kind of establishing me as a Bible study brand instead of just one-off author, I really wanted them to have women's faces on them. Mm-hmm. It was really important to me for them to be very beautiful and kind of forward thinking. They are all women of color.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want everyone to be included. The gospel is for everyone. And Bible studies and Christian books in general, they are very much marketed for white people. And, you know, statistically, women of color on a cover doesn't sell. And it's so weird, and I don't get it. The gospel is inclusive, so I want us to be as well. So because our society is diverse, it was really, really important to me to have just an establishment of unity within our covers. So ultimately, I would like there to be, you know, there's 66 books in the Bible. I would love for there to be 66 different looks of women on our covers. And I wanted them to be so beautiful that someone that wouldn't generally pick up a Bible study would grab it, because they look very much, you know, if anthropology were ever to carry a Bible study, they would carry ours if it was, you know, looks alone. It's very anthro inspired, but I want someone to pick it up because it's beautiful, but stay with it because it's good and it's deep and it's relatable. You know, for them to think, oh, if this book is beautiful and different, maybe Jesus is beautiful and different too. Maybe I didn't understand exactly who he is. So really my hope for women is that we all feel represented, that we all, that we all are learning together, and that we all feel like the Bible is for us and Jesus is for us, and that that there's a huge inclusivity within Christianity.
Yeah, and I feel like we're getting there. I feel like there's some stuff happening within the church walls, and I think the fact that church had to meet in our homes, I think that really is going to shake up a lot of how we do church now and how we see church now. And I hope so. Man, I hope so. And I know, like, as a mom of a sweet little African girl with the disability, like, she can't hear, I'm always like, the gospel's got to be, you've got to get it in everyone's hands. It can't just be for hearing people. It can't just be for the everyday American. Like, we've got to get it to everybody. And I know that, you know, there will be a day where every ear has heard, or understands. I'm just like anxious for that. Like, I fight, like right now I'm actually in the middle of like fighting for Zoe's camp experience, because she goes, all of our kids go to camp. It's a Christian faith-based camp. And every year I hit a brick wall with interpretation. Like, sure. Interpreter. Like, so, but I always get so mad because I'm like, ugh, do I want to fight this battle? Like, do I need to fight this? And then there's that, like, part of me that's like, camp gives the gospel in a kid-friendly way, in a way that she can get it. And so I'm always like, I'll fight this again because I need her to see outside of our home, Jesus. So.
Yeah. And you're not even just fighting for her. You're fighting for every hearing impaired child or adult.
Yeah.
I mean, you're fighting for a whole community, really. And I know that's a big undertaking, but I remember being at IF a couple years ago, and Jenny Allen talked about that very thing. And I don't remember the statistics, but it was something like,
it's insane. The statistics,
5% of churches or 10% of churches in the whole country, you know, have something. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's really important. When I look at it that way, I get really kind of like, oh my gosh. But then I'm also kind of like, okay, God, move. Do something amazing. And so I know that he will. Okay. This has been such a great conversation. Here are the last few questions that I ask everybody, because after conversations like this, where we really just get to pour our hearts out, we're friends. and I should know these things about you.
Yes.
Who or what is your guilty pleasure social media follow?
I love, okay, this is dumb. I don't follow a whole lot. I don't follow a whole lot of celebrities because I don't really watch a whole lot of TV. But I do love, I mean, Ellen, obviously, because she, we may think and, you know, we may be quite different, but she is someone that loves well.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Ellen and Dolly Parton were hugely different than each other.
Yes.
Just, they understand how to love people. And it doesn't matter if they're similar to them or different from them. And I feel like that is really who Jesus is Jesus loves everyone. It doesn't matter, you know, that we look the same, vote the same, have, it doesn't matter. You still are kind to people and you still love people. So Ellen is kind of my guilty pleasure.
What is something you've read, watched, or heard lately that you're obsessed with?
So again, we don't watch a whole lot of TV in our family because we're always outside, but also because it's hard to find something with the age range of our kids. Yeah. You know, we have a kindergartner all the way up to 20, but in the house we have, you know, a freshman in high school. So it's hard to find something that everyone watches, but we really loved, it's an Amazon show called Home Before Dark.
Okay. Oh, one last question. And I was told by everybody who I've emailed with about you to ask, why is your pink?
Oh, my hair. Yes. Okay. So it's been pink for about 4 years now.
Really?
And yeah. And I get questions all the time, like from our preschool teacher asking if someone that I know has breast cancer and it's my tribute to them or something. And she looked at me weird when I said, no, it's because I don't want to live timid. And she was like, I don't get it. So when I was in high school, I wanted to dye my hair pink. And I don't know if I just watched Grease too many times or, you know, Pink's hair was pink at the time. And Gwen Stefani had pink hair. And back when she was with No Doubt, and it was just, I don't know, it just looked fun to me. And I always, for Halloween, I bought this pink wig and I wore it every year, and I don't even care about Halloween, but I just loved wearing a pink wig. And so over 20 years I wanted pink hair, and I didn't think that, I don't know, I wasn't confident, I think, in who I was enough to go for it. I figured that people would look at me like I didn't really love Jesus, or that I wasn't smart, or that I was some big rebel or something. And I was sitting in my hairstylist chair a couple years ago, and I said, you know, I was just bummed that I missed my window. And she was like, why do you feel like you missed your window? And I said, well, I'm kind of old now. I mean, I was upper 30s. Now I'll be 41 this year. And she was like, Teresa, my mom is in her 60s and has bright purple hair, like bright purple. And I was like, really? Let me see a picture. So she showed me a picture of her darling, super fashionable mom. And I was like, okay, well, maybe let's just start in the back and just do a streak. So I did this small streak under, you know, by my neck so that I could cover it up if I wanted to, but it was bright, bright superhero pink. And I felt bold and just, you know, I was very proud of myself. And so I had that for about a year and felt like, you know, why do I care so much? I have a job that I work out of the house. I mean, writer, it's not like I have any, you know, anybody telling me what I should or should not look like. And I thought, our church is going to not want me to come speak to them because I have pink hair? Or, you know, what is this going to look like for me? And I talked to some friends, especially some friends at the publishing house, and they were like, why wouldn't you do it? So I did. And the day after, I went all over pink. So MOPS, corporate offices are about 10 minutes from my house. So I do things with them quite as well, as much as I'm able to. And I love MOPS. And they were having their big yearly fundraiser. So hundreds of women at this, it was a fashion event. And I arrive, I was on one, their committee, I was doing their social media for the event. And I show up with this pink hair and I was like, oh my gosh, is this too much? Are they just gonna be like, yeah, you need to turn around and go home? But no, everyone was like, you know, I get weird comments and weird faces sometimes, especially by older gentlemen. And I get, yeah, some people who are very, very traditional aren't a huge fan, including my parents. But for the most part, people like it. And not that I'm doing it for them by any means, I'm doing it for myself. But I realized, as my friend Kat, who's the girl that did my hair, she was like, you are living a timid life. And I said, I'm not. I have adopted all these kids. I've done, you know, all these things out of my comfort zone. She was like, yeah, but in the day to day, you're timid. Like, just who cares? Just do it. And so it's kind of my tribute to reminding myself to live bold, to go outside of my comfort zone every single day. Because who wants to live a comfortable life? You're not going to change the world if you're comfortable.
That's exactly, when we were getting ready to leave Alaska, it was over and over and over. Like, did God or did Jesus call the disciples to a life of comfort, or did he call them to a life of adventure? Yeah. And they were never safe. They were never comfortable. They were constantly on the move and moving on and never settled. They never had roots. Like, these were like the lessons that God just like really, really pressed into my heart that last year in Alaska. And then when we moved is when we got the call to adopt our daughter, and life is not boring anymore.
Life is not boring. Nope.
So maybe I need to prepare to go.
Maybe you do.
So fun. Teresa, this has been such a pleasure, such a great conversation. I'm so encouraged. One of the things that just keeps resonating in my head is just that, like, Jesus accepted all, he loved all, and he wants us to do the same.
Absolutely. That's true. That's the gospel right there.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on It's Time for Coffee.
I loved being on here, so thank you.
I hope this conversation met you right where you're at today. Be sure to check out Teresa's new Bible studies. Not only are they beautiful, but they're going to help you grow so much. Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come check me out. I'm at Jeanette Tapley on Instagram and at The Jeanette Tapley on Facebook. Everything you need to know about today's episode will be in the show notes at itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait for next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friends.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.